Hold on, for a second.
No, Sunday, of course, is at this point.
Yeah, but the reference, there's a new second of one symbol, so. Sunday.
Is that what all those three together?
The, or just all that one days have?
What new symbol
does this have? The second one.
Okay.
All right. Good morning, all. Everybody's good. Grab a seat. We're right at 10 or a couple minutes after. I'm trying to get us started on time so we can.
Meeting recording has started. This meeting is now being recorded.
And we have started the recording, so the meeting is in order. Thanks, everybody, for the trip in today. I know some of you were here yesterday. Some of you came in this morning. If you did, like me, sitting in traffic outside off the freeway for an hour was more than frustrating. But as I got closer to the building, I saw the big white tent set up, and I thought, this for tickback? But apparently not. So welcome all. Today's meeting is a culmination of a substantial amount of work and collaboration between these committee members, committees that have helped us along the way, including FMS, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. And importantly, and sometimes we leave it to the end to acknowledge, but I want to acknowledge at the beginning the work of budget staff getting us here today and how important they are, if not critical, to this process. So from John Wardlaw to Zlatko to Lucy to Brandy, all of the whole group that I'm probably leaving out, I'll preface my comments by saying thank you. We have seven or eight important agenda items today. They are all action items. I'm hopeful and confident that we can get through these well within our allotted schedule, but by saying that, I do not mean to imply that we should not have a spirited discussion as that becomes necessary. On the other hand, this is, as I noted, substantial, the result of collaboration and work among all these members. And I'm just stating the obvious, working through funding methodology and then to tick back unanimously, essentially, we went to the council in January and had the trial court funding methodology, sometimes commonly referred to as the old WAFM, approved. And so we're beyond that today. We're beyond a discussion of the funding methodology that has been approved by the council unanimously to get us where we are today. Today we're discussing allocations based upon that methodology. And much of that allocation is workload-based. There's some allocations, obviously, within there that are outside of that. There's some allocations that relate to true costs that a court experiences, and sometimes those true costs go up, and sometimes the true costs go down, and the funding methodology that's been in place for, as I understand, years and years also addresses that. So some of the numbers we see moving around on these allocations today don't have to do with workload. They have to do with true costs that a court either experiences going up or going down, but we can address that as we get there. So with that, I'm going to turn to Brandy, now that I've said all that, and ask Brandy, I think, to take the call.
Yes, thank you. Judge Conklin?
Present.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Blum?
Here.
Judge Buckley?
Here.
Judge Cope?
Here.
Judge Herman? Judge Heinrichs? Judge Lucas?
Here.
Judge Marginis?
Here.
Judge Maragonda?
Here.
Judge McCabe? Ms. Carter?
Here.
Ms. Eberhardt?
Here.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Ms. Fleming?
Brady, this is David Yamasaki. Ms. Fleming gave me her proxy.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Flenner?
Here.
Mr. Harrigan?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
Here.
Ms. Romero-Souls?
Here.
Mr. Taylor?
This is Chad Fink. Excuse me, Chad Finke. Mr. Taylor gave me his proxy.
Thank you. Ms. Ugrin Capobianco?
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Theodorovich?
Here.
And our seizure liaison, Judge Gabe.
And she's a non-voting member for Fresno, so she doesn't have a proxy to give me. But I know she's going to, as a matter of fact, I think she's traveling today.
Thank you.
So I remind everybody, as I think Brandy was about to, we're being recorded. So obviously we know who we are in this room. We've worked so closely together for a period of time. But as you speak today, if you could do your best to identify yourself so those listening into the meeting are aware who is speaking, that would be very helpful. Again, if you're calling in on the phone, please don't put us on. Please, right, don't put us on hold, because we'll de-hold you immediately if you do that. Moving to the first item of business, as included in your materials, on page one of the materials is our agenda, but then we have the minutes from our last telephonic meeting, and I would ask for a motion to approve those minutes. They're set forth on page five, and that's the teleconference from May 7th. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Planet moves. Approval.
Second.
All right, second, and moved and seconded to approve the minutes. Is there any opposition to the approved motion for the minutes of the May 7th meeting? Watching, listening, hearing none, those minutes are approved. I'm also told, and I want to make sure it's current, there was no written public comment received today. I have received some various emails in the past few days just addressing issues on our agenda, but those were not any items that would be outside of open meeting, so to speak, and they were specifically, as they were provided, were specifically commented that they are not intended to be public comment, so they will not be addressed as such. And there's no public comment in the room that I see, so we've closed the public comment. That gets us right on schedule. And we're going to turn first to item one. That's the extension of the V3 case management system. In general, it's consideration of the recommendation from R&E, and David Yamasaki is going to address this in detail, to extend the use of the funding approved by the Judicial Council for the V3 CMS migration past June 30th, 2019. David, thank you very much, and we look forward to your comments.
Thank you very much, Judge Conklin. I'm presenting today as one of the courts that was represented in the action that was that took place in April of 2015. One of the courts that was on the, or continues to be on the V3 platform. There were a total of four courts that received funding to continue operating with that system, and that funding allowed courts to utilize the system. As many people recall, V3 was a technology solution that was anticipated to be the solution for all of the courts, and as a result of Judicial Council action many years ago, the program was discontinued. Nevertheless, courts were using the system and continue to use the system, and as a aspect of that, the Judicial Council maintained funding so that all of those courts can utilize the system until such time as they moved on. That particular action resulted in the submission of a budget change proposal because the funding was slated to end on June 30th, 2019. The budget change proposal was to allow courts to receive funding for a replacement system, and that was expected to be completed by June 19. However, as many of the courts have embarked on new deployments, those schedules have been extended significantly, and in discussions with the different courts using V3, it was very obvious that June 19 was not going to be, the date which the courts would be moving off. And early on in 2016, one of the proposals that were discussed involved perhaps scaling back the services of the V3 courts, and the effort was anticipated to determine if there would be any sort of cost savings and if the reduction in services would in turn have an adverse effect on the different courts. In the table under item number one, one of the documents shows that the five-year projected expense for the V3 courts was going to be approximately $22 million. What the proposal, kind of a proof of concept, was to see if these reduced services would, first of all, reduce the expenses in supporting the V3 courts, and also to see if courts would be able to operate with the reduced level of services. So beginning a couple of years ago, services were scaled back. And in return, you see on the second line what the reductions essentially produced. And under that particular item, you'll see under line two, the reductions in services ended up projecting $15 million for that reduced service levels to cost. By comparison with the five-year projection at $22 million, it would have netted a savings of $7 million. And this proposal, which was voted on by the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee earlier this month, was to allow the reduction to take place in services and take some of that savings, which is $7 million, to give one additional year for courts to transition off of the V3 supported program. All told, the net cost would be $18 million, so there would still be a savings of approximately $4 million from what was originally projected. And so the request that was made and approved by R&E was to extend the funding beyond 2019, not seeking additional funding, but rather extending the timeline by one additional year. And all of the courts that are under this program or the beneficiaries of this program are prepared to end the funding in 2020. And have alternate solutions ready to go thereafter. So the proposal was, again, approved by the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. And again, we want to make it perfectly clear, there is not additional funding requested. It's merely an extension and using some of the savings to give us that extra year.
David, thank
Happy
you.
To answer any questions.
Thank you very much, and exactly that. Any questions or concerns for David? And I should preface this. I mentioned the work of FMS. R&E is also critically important to our work. I'm trying to make sure Judge Taylor and Sherry are co-chairs of the, pardon me, Barton. I apologize. It's a long drive up. Barton and Sherry Carter are co-chairs of that, and I thank you for the work your committee does as well. Back to David's presentation. Any questions, concerns? I'm just parroting what David just said, but I think it's important to emphasize this is not an increase in funding. It's simply the funding being spent out in an additional year.
So I would make the motion that we extend the funding, as outlined by David.
Also.
Any further discussion or concerns about the motion? So this is set forth. So the recommendation on page 10, the motion is to approve. The recommendation is set forth on page 10 of your materials. Any discussion about this issue before we call for a vote? Is there any opposition from any committee member up to the motion to adopt the recommendation set forth on page 10 to send to the Judicial Council? Any abstentions?
Judge, I think I plan to abstain because we're obviously...
Mr. Planet, Mr. Roddy,
Barton,
thank you, and David Yamasaki have all abstained. Okay.
Just margins.
Right, because you're all impacted by it, and I appreciate that. So that extension is appropriate to abstain with things that impact you personally. But that, we still have clearly a quorum to accept this. Any additional discussion? Motion passes. I've been informed also that Judge McCabe just got off the bench. He's taking off his robe. He's putting on his sweater. He's getting on the phone, and he's joining us very quickly. So I'm sure he'll be with us as well. So we're going to now move to item number two, and that is the discussion of the allocations. Again, this is on recommendation from R&E for from the IMF. Donna from Judicial Council Budget Services is going to present this. The materials on item two begin at page 11 of your materials. Donna, you bet. Donna, thank you very much. And Sherry and Judge Barton, obviously, you brought this to us, so anything you want to preface or add in, please do so.
I was just going to indicate that this is a $60 million approved allocation. One of the significant aspects to this is that in virtually all categories, staff has reduced expenditures from last year. The one exception is budget services, and I think that was about a $22,000 increase. So I think it's important to recognize the work of staff in reducing these costs. And with that, I'll turn it over.
And I just want to, I appreciate that comment. So the reduction in, based upon those efforts, it actually results in a reduction of cost, correct?
Correct.
Okay, great, thank you. Council, go ahead.
Thank you, Judge Barton, Judge Conklin. I'm Donna Newman, Budget Supervisor of Budget Services. As you said, Judge Barton, the request from the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund is $60.4 million. The request is $14.4 million less than what was requested in 2017-18. I'm going to ask you if you'd like to refer to the narrative on page 11 in your packet. Attachment 2, which is located on page 14, is support of the narrative, if you'd like to reference that as well. Beginning on page 11 with the first program, Audit Services, they're requesting $370,000 this fiscal year. This is a savings of $268,000 from the prior year, and this is due to a reassessment of needs. Branch Accounting and Procurement is requesting $1.5 million. The savings is nearly 30% from their prior year request, and again, this is from reassessment of need. The Center for Families, Children, and the Courts is requesting an allocation of $5.2 million, and this is the exact same allocation as last fiscal year. Also asking for the same allocation as the prior year is the Center for Judiciary Education and Research. Their request is $1.2 million. Court Operation Services is requesting $143,000. From a program standpoint, this is unchanged from the prior year. They did have a one-time funding for BCP in 2017 and 18 for their language access BCP. Budget Services is requesting $337,000. This is a slight increase over the prior year. The increase is to support staffing costs in the Treasury Services unit. Human Resources is requesting $22,000. This is a reduction of 12% as compared to prior year, and again, this is a reassessment of need. The Information Technology has reduced their request by over $12 million from the prior year. $9.2 million of that is from BCP adjustments, which include full-year cost adjustments of the following. This is the final year of funding for the case management system replacement and the Sustained Justice CMS BCP funding. The Madeira CCTC BCP has ended in last fiscal year, 2017-18. We did receive new BCP funding, and it will begin in 18-19 for the self-represented litigants. Information Technology was also able to reduce another $3.2 million by revising their hardware refresh costs, renegotiating contracts, and reducing projections for their consultants. In total, Information Technology is requesting $44.7 million for 2018-19. Legal Services is requesting $6.9 million, which is a savings of about $180,000. This is due to ongoing savings from position vacancies within the Regional Office Assistance Program. So again, the total request from the IMF for 2018-19 is $60.4 million. So that you can be assured that the IMF has sufficient funding to support the request. You can go to page 18 in your packet, which is attachment 2C, the fund condition statement. I'll direct your attention to column D, line 29, which represents the 2017-18 forecasted fund balance of $5.2 million. And right next to that in column E, which would be the 2018-19 projected fund balance is $1.5 million. So sufficient funding. I would say that looking into the future years, though, 19-20 and beyond, the fund is projected to be insolvent. The Judicial Council staff continue to work with Department of Finance to resolve the structural imbalance of the fund. This concludes my presentation of the IMF allocation request. Is there any questions I can answer?
Judge Conklin, I just want to point out that I'm glad you raised the deficit that we will be facing. At the ARNI, we did talk about when we would need to start addressing that. and we'll have to probably start talking about it in the fall. I think it's actually a little worse than what is projected. I believe that if you look at line 26 that shows the negative $4.2 million, I think it's carried as a positive on line 1 the next year. And if that's an error, we're really looking at $11 million the year after. So anyway, bottom line is we're going to have to start looking at that. And it's all around the revenues on 7, 8, 9. A lot of the revenue funding is what the problem is. So we'll have to start discussing that in the fall to address those issues.
Judge Conklin, this is John Wardlaw. Just if you don't mind, we have been having conversations with the Department of Finance, and this will be a focal point during the summer discussions as well with them to make sure that they're tracking and that we do everything we can to get additional funds coming in.
I appreciate that, John, and I think what Sherry and I agree with both of those comments. This has been something that we've seen on the radar for quite a while, and to use your words, John, it's now going to become very vocal. I mean, we're now to that brink where within a year it's going to be insolvent, and the efforts that have been put forth, I think, will continue to be very extensive. So, Donna, thank you very much for that presentation. We're moving along at a great clip. Any questions, concerns, comments about? So the recommendation, Judge Barton and Ms. Carter, is your request is the recommendation on page 13 be moved and approved, and I'll invite that motion.
This is Judge Marginis. I move to approve.
I'll second.
McCabe, second.
Okay. 2 seconds. Tanya's in the room, so she'd. But Judge McCabe, we appreciate that too. So it's been moved and seconded that the recommendation on page 13 be adopted and set forth to the council for its July meeting. Any additional comments, objections, or concerns about that motion? So specifically calling for any objections to the motion that's been made. Seeing and hearing none, the motion is unanimously approved. The recommendation on page 13 has been adopted by TICFAC. We'll now move to item 3 on the agenda, and this is further discussion. This is now allocations from the TCTF, the Trial Court Trust Fund, and we have with us to discuss this Michelle Allen, and this also comes from R&E, Ms. Carter, Judge Barton. Again, thank you so much for the work that you guys continue to do behind the scenes on all of this. Any prepping or
I just want to point out there is an excellent summary on pages 23 and 24. I'm sure you've looked at it. And I also want to point out on the fund condition statement on page 25, we are looking at a structural deficit there that we'll have to address, and I'm sure John will say that we are working on it as well. So, but I think the summary was, you know, really well done on pages 23 and 24.
Thank you. All right, Michelle.
Good morning. The Judicial Council Budget Services brings before the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee consideration of recommendation to approve 2018-19 allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund in the amount of $2 billion and approve recommended allocation of general fund in the amount of $68.8 million for Judicial Council at its July 19, 2018 meeting. Attachment A provides details of the following preliminary recommended allocations. Recommended allocations for Judicial Council staff approved by the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee at its May 18, 2018 meeting in the amount of $3.6 million are found in lines 21 through 27. Support for operation of trial courts in the amount of $1.8 billion includes 2017-18 adjusted TCTF base allocation in the amount of $1.78 billion found on line 8, of which $9.2 million is recommended for criminal justice realignment funding. New and changed allocations on line 13 includes $23.8 million for non-court interpreter employee benefits shown on line 12. Support for operation of trial courts presented to and approved by the R&E subcommittee in the amount of $39.3 million is shown on line 48. The self-help recommendation allocation of $21.6 million includes an approved $19.1 million 2018-19 budget change proposal to expand the availability of attorneys and paralegal staff at self-help centers in trial courts. The funding, which is included in the governor's budget, has made it through to May revise. It is included in the recommended allocations, assuming it is included in the 2018-19 Budget Act. R&E subcommittee recommended allocation of $136.7 million for court-appointed dependency counsel is shown on line 39. Court interpreter benefits on lines 15 and 16 include funding an amount of $1.08 million for court interpreter employee benefits for the 2017-18 cost changes in the 2018 May revise, and one-time funding in the amount of $4 million for court interpreter employee benefits based on an approved 2018-19 BCP with the anticipation of its inclusion in the 2018-19 Budget Act. R&E subcommittee recommendation in the amount of $9.2 million for expenditures incurred by the Judicial Council staff on behalf of the courts is shown on line 37. Allocation of $68.9 million in general fund for employee benefits as shown on line 2. Attachment B displays the TCTF fund condition, projected to have a 2018-19 ending fund balance of $74 million, of which approximately $17.1 million are restricted funds and $56.9 million are unrestricted. The projected fund balance can support the 2018-19 proposed budgetary allocations. Two allocations are pending and will be brought before TICBAC at a future meeting. Following court's reporting of the preliminary 2017-18 ending fund balances as of July 2018, the TICBAC will consider the final allocation reductions for fund balances above the 1% cap prior to their recommendations to the Judicial Council, and the allocation of monies collected through the Dependency Council Collections Program will be brought to TICBAC and Council once the final 2017-18 collections are known. We're happy to answer any questions.
Questions, comments? The recommendation is set forth on page 21 that we're about to call to a vote. John Wardlow is still on the phone. John, is there anything you wanted to add to this?
No additional comment beyond, this is, again, a focal point for discussions with finance about the overall condition of the fund and the need for solvency.
George Barton, Ms. Carter, anything? Mr. Plant.
Yeah. Mike Plant, just a question to refresh my memory. What is the criminal justice realignment funding geared at?
I don't understand the question, sorry.
On page 23, line 7.
It's the 9.2 million criminal justice realignment.
I forgot what that was going for.
Oh, it's both. Do you understand?
I do. I don't know the specifics of, other than it's supporting the program for the criminal justice realignment. But specifics to that program, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, this is Lotto. If you recall, when criminal justice realignment occurred, there was a funding provided to the branch to deal with the additional hearings that were, and so this is just that specific allocation occurring per the methodology that was developed by the Criminal Justice Realignment Subcommittee from several years ago.
You submit your petitions data to Criminal Justice Services here, and that's how they base the allocation.
So this is AB 109,
AB 109.
47. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Correct.
There's no funding for AB for 47 going forward.
Again,
AB 109 is an ongoing amount.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Sure.
So any additional comments, questions about the recommendation as set forth in your materials on page 21? I see there are no hands up. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation as set forth on page 21 of the materials for submission to the Judicial Council at this July meeting?
So moved.
Second, Yamasaki.
Moved and approved. Moved and seconded. Any concerns, comments, or questions about the motion that is now pending? And again, in the room, and Judge McCabe also recognizing you on the phone, is there any objection to the motion to approve the recommendation set forth on page 21?
I've watched. I've listened. I see none in the room. Judge McCabe does not apparently have any as well, so the motion. I also want to know if your sweater was on, Judge McCabe, but we're sure it is.
It is. Thank you.
So the recommendation on page 21 of the materials is unanimously adopted for submission to the Judicial Council. Thank you very much. So we'll now turn, again, at a great clip to item 4 on the agenda, and this is a discussion of the recommendation from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee chaired by both myself and Ms. Fleming, and many of you in the room participate in that as well, for the allocation of the $47.8 million in the governor's proposed budget action. This is consideration, again, from FMS. For the 2018-19 allocations, I know you're all aware of this, but just to remind as well, the current proposed budget includes a specified amount. So essentially, and I want to be careful the way I phrase this, so it essentially is not a new money allocation. It is a designated allocation for use only for the purposes set forth in the budget item, and that purpose is to equalize funding among courts by bringing all courts to the statewide average funding level, which is a floating average. Every year, obviously, an average changes. That's a definition of an average. So with that, just summarizing the work done by FMS, Rebecca is not with us on my specific order that she absolutely not participate in today's meeting because she, I think, is taking a few days off for the first time in about a decade. Mm-hmm. So I told her she couldn't participate. But with that, it's obviously most important from Leah to present this. And Leah, I turn it over to you. And this starts again for everybody who has the materials, page 26 of your materials.
Great. Thank you, Judge Conklin. I just want, you gave a nice introduction. I'm just going to add to say that we shared a preliminary version of the $47.8 million allocation with courts in late January as part of this committee's commitment to share allocation information as soon or as early as possible for planning purposes. We did include that version in the packet. It is here on page 29. It's again the version that went out in January. And we did attempt to heavily caveat that version to make courts aware that we had many pending changes anticipated for those proposed allocations, such as updated filings data. And we go into a little bit more detail in the memo on page 27 about the additional changes that would affect the final allocation of that funding. With those changes implemented, both the dollar amount needed to bring courts to the statewide average and the statewide average funding levels were no longer the numbers and the percentages that were mentioned in the governor's proposed budget. And so FMS had to determine or come up with a way to allocate that $47.8 million to best comply with the spirit of the budget language. And so at its March 26th meeting, FMS met to consider two different options. Staff brought forward two options for consideration. In option one, the funding is first allocated by bringing all courts up to the 76.9% that was mentioned in the governor's proposal. And then the remaining funding is allocated to the courts that are farthest away from the statewide average with the intent of bringing those courts up to the highest level of funding possible. Option two starts in the same way by bringing courts up to the 76.9, but then it distributes funding to courts that are all courts that are below the then statewide average funding level. The two options are also included in your packet. They appear on page 30. I notice in looking at it now that it says at the top draft scenario, January 26, 18. It should actually say March 26, 18. That was the date that we brought it to FMS. And again, the options that we were sharing with FMS on March 26 were the dollar amounts and percentages that were current at that time. And FMS recommended unanimously that option one be adopted. And so based on that decision and with all the model inputs like the filings data now finalized, the proposal for allocating the $47.8 million is shown on page 31 of the packet. There are a couple of, again, the memo itself lays out all of the different ways that the amounts might have changed, but there are a couple of things that I should point out specifically. At the time that we ran the numbers in January, we didn't have the information from the benefits survey that is conducted in March, and so I think that by itself contributes to some major shifts for courts that may have had changes in those numbers. So if you are one of those courts, you may see a change from January to what we're showing now. There also was a policy change that the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee adopted that modifies how we measure infractions workload. And the change specifically affects courts who may have once had over 100,000 filings and whose average filings in that category has declined. And so the result of those couple of changes and some filings updates may lead to some differences in the numbers that that courts may have seen in January and that are seen now. So under the current proposal with the option one that FMS recommends, 35 courts would receive some portion of the $47.8 million funding, and the new statewide average funding level would be 82%. So the recommendation that we're making today is that TCBAC approve the allocation pending, of course, the finalization of the governor's budget.
So I'll open it up to discussion, and I'll start that discussion. This was, as we started this with FMS, there was concern about instantly proposing numbers because we know what happens when people see numbers. And I'm just going to, I try not to do this. I'm not sure I ever have before, but I am going to use my own court as an example just to show where this gets us. This was a policy discussion through FMS, and there's many FMS members in the room. Please, if your recollection is different or you want to add anything, I encourage you to do so. But we decided early on to make this a policy-driven recommendation, not a numbers-driven recommendation. So the policy was just that. We decided to say, okay, let's bring those courts that are the most underfunded up to the average funding level. And those recognizing those numbers will change substantially. Fresno lost $2 million. January, we're going to get 2.2. Now we're getting 10% of that. That's a bitter pill to swallow. As Sharon reminded me yesterday. But at the same time, the discussion was we can't be tied back to those numbers. But more importantly, what those numbers exemplify is things change. And when those things change, they are impacted by the ultimate allocation. If your numbers go down, your allocation goes down. If other number-driven factors in the methodology change, your numbers change. And so that's what happened. So I say this because for all of you in the room, and I know how adept you are at looking at these, I too was struck by the way some of these numbers just shifted, just flipped. Some courts were seeing negative, very negative allocations, and now they're very positive allocations. This is not an example of where one court is being made to say, you're getting too much, give it back. This is exactly the opposite. This is where the courts who were not getting enough, their numbers are changing, and they might not be getting as much as they were before to bring them up the average because the average changed, and so did their numbers. So I just wanted to preface it with that. I think the most important attachment is, from my perspective, on page 31, 4C, and that's the ultimate math that comes down to $47.8 million. So you can see as you look down that any court that has a zero is because they were not one of those courts that was below the ultimate average need. So they, by definition, would not be part of the $47.8 million, because that's what the budget language clearly says. Those courts that are within the $47.8 million, that's where the allocations ultimately came out. Leah, if you want to correct anything about those generalities, please feel free to do so. Any questions, concerns, especially from FMS members in the room that want to add anything to this at all about these allocations? Judge Lucas?
Leah, can you just briefly walk us through what will happen to this if the numbers get changed by the legislature?
Can you tell me if the numbers get changed
if the numbers went up or down that were allocated under this category, how would that affect this analysis?
So, Judge, I think you're talking about the discretionary 75 million, and this was separate money that was targeted just to bring them up. I don't think they're looking at that money, are they? They're not.
I haven't heard, but Zlatko, I think, is probably better positioned to answer.
No, yeah, both houses adopted the 47.8 without any issues. While it's part of the broader chocolate funding discussion, there's not been a dispute or question about this number, value, and any method to allocate it other than what was identified in the governor's budget.
I'm aware of the 75 issue. So I guess what we're saying is that we see no possibility of this number changing.
I mean, obviously, if something catastrophic happens in the budget, then everything is subject to revision. But this is one of those ones that's has not had any negative feedback from the legislature, and so we're anticipating that it'll be in the budget the way it was proposed in the governor's budget. Whereas the 75 is still at discussion and has had various views upon it, and therefore it's not ready to be something to anticipate being ready for allocation.
I accept that as the answer to my question.
So Judge Lucas, I appreciate your optimism. I think we all are on that balance of recognizing the budget's not the budget until it's approved.
Yeah.
But the 47.8, as I understand it, so far has pretty much gone along and been moving through as we all would hope.
If Zlatko says I can be optimistic, I'm certainly willing to be optimistic.
Right. And this is ongoing. So this is not a one-time allegation. This is, as I understand it, ongoing for that purpose, to address those courts that, and there will always be, again, because it's just math, when you look at an average is defined by those above and those below. So every year will be those that, when the statewide average is recalculated, that are below, and that's where this money will go. And again, that's why FMS exists, because FMS is there to address it, to pivot as necessary, and every year to come back, to tick back, and then go to the council if it needs to change. Judge Buckley?
I thought that 47, these numbers would be added to our respective budgets or not added if it's a zero. And that's it going forward.
Correct.
We will not every year readjust the 47.8.
I'm sorry, you're right. So it's not the 47.8 that will be readjusted. You're correct. But every year we'll adjust for those above, those below.
Right. So only because Butte is up there, 1 million. That's added to their budget ongoing, period, and will not be adjusted.
That's correct. That's when you say ongoing, that's a more appropriate way to state it. Sherry? Or did you?
I was just going to make a motion that we approve the 47.8 million as outlined, as recommended. I don't think we should ever establish policy around individual county impacts. I think it's a policy that's right for the branch, and so I would make a motion that we adopt the recommendation.
As set forth on page 27.
This is Tom, I'll second
that. Moved and seconded that the recommendation on page 27 be approved. We're well within the time allotted. I don't want to encourage unnecessary discussion, but I don't want to discourage it either. Any comments at all about the recommendation of this allocation that will go to the Judicial Council at its July meeting? Any objection to the motion that's been moved and seconded? Seeing no objection, the motion for the recommendation on page 27 is moved, approved, and adopted unanimously. So I'm tempted to take a break, but I don't want to interfere with great. We're making great progress at this point, even though it's only 10:45. That moves us to item 5, the self-help funding allocation recommendation. Am I missing?
Bonnie is here.
Okay. Bonnie's going to present this with Leah again. And this is consideration, again, from FMS about the self-help allocation, including the updated population data to the methodology. Bonnie, thank you very much. Leah, thank you very much. I'll turn it over to you. And this starts at page 37 of your material. No, I'm sorry. That's the next one. I'm getting too optimistic.
32.
32 of your material. Thank you.
So I will start it off, Judge Conklin. This is Leah, and then Bonnie, of course, will set me straight when I go astray. So currently, and again, there's a memo and some materials starting at page 32 So currently, trial courts receive a total of $11.2 million in trial court trust fund and IMF funding for self-help services, and there is an additional $19.1 million proposed in the Budget Act of 2018. So the current method of allocation for that is to give all courts a baseline level of funding that's equal to $34,000, and then allocating the remainder using population data. So until this year, allocations had been based on 2005 population data. And FMS met at its last meeting. They passed a unanimous recommendation that these allocations be updated to reflect more current population data. And population is a slightly different methodology than what we use in other parts of allocation. The concept here is that self-help services are intended to be provided to all members of a community, regardless of whether or not that assistance may result in a filing. And so population has been deemed a good proxy for this type of funding. So in Table 1 on page 33, we show how the self-help funding would be allocated using updated population data. We break that out by each of the different sources of the self-help funding, both the trial court trust fund funding, which is shown in column D, and the IMF portion of the self-help funding in column E. And we also show how the proposed $19.1 million might be allocated according to this updated population data over in column F. And the total allocation then for self-help would be shown on the far right side. It's bolded in column G. In table 2, we show the data in just a slightly different way. We show the proposed allocation of self-help funding proposed for the two different funds. They're in the green shading, or if you print it in black and white, it would be columns A and C. And then we show the last year's allocation of that same money in the light blue columns. That's columns B and D. The net effect, or the change for each court, compare it from last year to this year, is then shown in column E. And if you have a number, if there's a number in parentheses, for example, looking at the bottom of page 34, the last court listed on that page is Lake, and they have a number in parentheses of $751. That means that due to population changes, their allocation would be down $751 compared to the previous year. There are two recommendations that FMS is making to TICBAC. One is to approve the allocations that are shown in Table 1, contingent on that additional 19.1 in self-help funding being provided in the Budget Act. Secondly, we're asking that TICBAC, at the very least, approve use of updated population data as a policy decision to determine allocation of funding. So in the event that self-help money were not allocated, the new self-help money, at the very least, we would be using updated population data to allocate the existing self-help funding. Bonnie, did you wish to add anything before I...
No, I would just say there's also a $34,000 base that is part of the allocation, and that would be potentially another policy decision that the program, and what I think we have the desire to have a decision for this coming year's funding based on the fact that the Budget Act does contain language that any unspent money on self-help would refer to the state budget, where in the past that has not been the case. So, for example, funds from the Trial Court Improvement Fund could revert to the Trial Court Improvement Fund. So we have a great interest in getting the money out quickly and assisting the courts in making good decisions. And being able to spend those funds appropriately.
Right, thank you. And so I'll just add I should have said again that the base is also a feature of the allocations proposed for this coming year, and that we will come back to this body very soon with a proposal for looking at the base and how to allocate self-help funding ongoing as a policy issue. But that today the recommendation and the focus will be on just the 18-19 allocations.
But again, that can always and will continue to address this through FMS next year. But right now, recognizing you got to get this to the council so they can approve an allocation in July. That's why it's coming to you at this point in this status.
Judge, I move approval of the recommendations, items 1 and 2.
Okay, so this is the recommendation is set forth on your material, so everybody has the same page 36 of your material, and you move to recommend both 1 and 2. So 1 would be table 1 and 2, as Leah detailed, is, again, just being prepared for all contingencies that the updated population as a policy decision is set forth in item 2.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any questions, concerns, or discussion about the recommendations set forth on page 36 for item 5? Any opposition to the motion that's been moved and seconded to approve the recommendation? Hearing and seeing none, the recommendation on page 36 of the materials is unanimously approved for submission to the Judicial Council on its July session. I know we have not been in session for a particularly long time. It's getting close to 11 o'clock, and so I'm going to suggest we only have two or three items to go. Many of you have been here overnight, and so this is already a long morning for you, so I'm going to suggest a break. There's a chance. So let's just go. Let's at least for now stand in recess for 20 minutes. That'll take us to 11:15. We'll come back. I think we're well within time to conclude by 2 at the latest. I know there might be some of you that are hoping to conclude before that, and I think we're going to be able to do that as well, assuming that everybody has time for discussion. So we'll stop. For those of you that are listening in, we will not start before 11:15, so you can go about your business, and we will start again 11:15 at the earliest. Thank you. I'm told we're unable to mute the room, so if you're having a conversation, it's not muted yet.
No, correct.
Or we're on that. So you can talk about the Dodgers and the fact that they're starting to do better if you want.
Hey, no, that's not.
Alex texted me yesterday. He said you knocked it out of the park. I listened to it.
We saw him yesterday. Yeah.
He said planet.
That was an interesting discussion.
Yeah. Do we know? Did you get a sense where Mark and I were just asking? There was something. Okay.
How are you, Kim?
Good.
Doing well?
Yeah, we're waiting for the tech guy to
because they can hear.
Yes.
Oh, guys.
Remember, we're not muted yet.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can't hear you on the phone.
Started, and then we'll get back to our agenda. All right, recording's been started. Thank you for anybody joining us back on the phone. We appreciate your presence. We are remaining well on track on the agenda. And that gets us to item 6 on the agenda, simplified displays. This item comes to us also from a recommendation from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee to adopt simplified displays for trial court allocations, including the funding methodology, the trial court funding methodology that we've all discussed, otherwise known as WAFM. And I'm going to turn it over to Brandy to present the displays for your consideration. Brandy?
Thank you. In an effort to simplify the WAFM displays included as an item in the funding methodology subcommittee work plan, we are presenting two document recommendations for review and approval effective July 1st, 2018. The approach to simplification was to first identify what required updating and then determine who the audience would be. The first document, attachment 6A, which is page 39, is a high-level allocation display that has hypothetical numbers and shows what a court's ending total allocation was from the prior year. It then walks through the changes that impacts the new year's allocation, ending in a new total allocation amount. The path includes changes only or deltas as it relates to the WAFM allocation with a column for any new discretionary funding allocated via WAFM, followed by updated WAFM need and a percentage comparison, and ending in other funds that are not allocated via WAFM, which also has a column for other new funding that may be received. This display excludes restricted funding allocations and reimbursements. The second document, attachment 6B on page 40, is an executive summary display, also with hypothetical numbers, also excluding restricted funding allocations and reimbursements, and this provides a single page representation that we will prepare for each court. This document reflects current funding position, funding staffing positions, changes from prior year, full dollar amount allocations, not deltas, and relative statewide perspectives for reference. The self-help funding and the civil assessment information that is highlighted in the gray boxes are intended to showcase relative areas of focus and could change year to year. Finally, there are acronyms spelled out at the bottom of the page that may be updated also depending on how information in the display changes. For additional details of what is reflected in the executive summary, the viewer can refer to the high-level display that we just reviewed in Attachment 6A. That's all I have. I'll answer
any questions. All right, questions, Tanya?
I don't have a question, but I just want to thank you profusely for doing this. And the second page on 40 is going to make my bench very happy.
Awesome.
And because so it's sorry, judges in the room, but it is really easily
wow. Read.
So I'm one of those. I'm going to echo.
Okay, Judge Koch.
I'm one of those judges, and I ask for that specific at the bottom of page 40 because I still don't get those acronyms, and I'm still a guy who thinks IMF is Impossible Mission Fund.
Well, it
so
is.
It is
in many cases, but
reference to a movie. But I've got to congratulate Randy and staff. Now,
this
just
is
so
good.
It's clear,
this is great.
Every court will get one of these. So what you see on page 40 is simply a generic form, but it will be every court will have their own numbers. The form that will come to you is much more pleasant to the eye. It's in full color. It's really impressive work. So I too, from a user's perspective, looked at it.
Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing. Thank you.
But that it came from FMS for those purposes. So please, any thoughts or comments or suggestions for even more improvement? There's always ways to improve.
Just one, if it's possible to fit it in on under additional court information, where it refers to Program 10 and Program 90. If you could put either words in there that explain those, or drop it down into the series of explanations at the bottom.
It's a great suggestion.
Absolutely. Operations is 10. Admin is 90. Okay. See, I still question.
And that also, the point that Brandy made at the end is, if anybody wants to drill down behind these numbers, they'll have the opportunity to do that. So this is not in any way to prevent the information from being made available to users who want it. It's just an effort to better summarize that information, present it in a one-page sheet for course.
Right, comprehensive.
Easy read snapshot. Great.
With another effort for transparency to get, so everybody knows our number's in and our number's out. Any other thoughts? Is there a, David, you have your hand up?
No.
Well, I was going to interpret that as a motion, but is there a motion?
Buckley.
Oh, Judge Buckley.
Buckley moves.
Buckley moves.
And
so moved and seconded that the recommendation is set forth on page 38 of your materials be submitted to the Judicial Council for its July meeting.
With the amendment for Program 10 and Program 90 to clarify what
yep.
those are.
And I like that too. So Program 10 and Program 90, either by down below or in even smaller font, will say what that means. Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion to adopt the recommendation on page 38? Any opposition to the motion to adopt the recommendation on page 38? Seeing and hearing none, the recommendation on page 38 is unanimously approved for submission to the Judicial Council. And now moving to item 7. On the agenda, and this is, again, as I started my comments, and I'll preface them again before I turn it over to Michelle for discussion of this item and other staff members, this is the culmination of everything. So this is the ultimate allocation. But this allocation, the methodology for this allocation has already been approved and moved on by the council. So this is the numbers being plugged into the formula. The council, it has to make an allocation in July. That's what they're required to do. And TICBAC's function is to say to the council, here's what those allocations should be based upon the funding methodology that's already been approved. So the only consideration for this body today is the numbers in the allocation versus the methodology of the allocation. But I don't mean to in any way stifle discussion, so I'll move to the presentation.
Thank you. The Judicial Council Budget Services brings before the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee consideration of recommendation to approve 2018-19 preliminary trial court allocations for the Judicial Council July meeting to satisfy Government Code 68502.5, Section C2A's requirement that the Judicial Council make a preliminary allocation for the trial courts in July of each fiscal year. Attachment 7A displays the recommended preliminary allocations before the committee. The attachment reflects the funding methodology subcommittee's work plan to simplify allocations display. This includes elimination of historical base and showing the changes to WAFM allocations. We bring to the committee's attention that column H of the attachment shows the allocation of the $47.8 million included in the 2018-19 governor's budget as presented earlier in item 4, and the changes to the self-allocations based on updated population data as well at the allocation of the $19.1 million in new funding. Pending allocations not included in today's recommendation includes reduction amounts related to trial court reserves above the 1% cap, as these will not be available for consideration by the committee prior to the July Judicial Council meeting. The allocation of $75 million of new funding in the governor's proposed budget under consideration by the Senate and Assembly moved forward to conference with the allocation methodology yet to be decided. Judicial Council Budget Services will bring back to this committee these and any changes to appropriations provided for in the Budget Act of 2018. We put before the committee recommendations on Attachment 7A for consideration of approval to go before the Judicial Council at its July 2018 meeting.
Thank you. So I'll just state again what was just stated, and sort of the elephant in the room, the $75 million that we remain optimistic about but cannot yet be decided to be allocated because it's not here yet. So I'm not trying in any way to ignore it. It's been acknowledged that we are hopeful and optimistic based upon the way things have been proceeding so far, that that is available in a much-needed fashion for the courts. But since we don't have it, we can't make a recommendation how to allocate it. But I don't want to get too far ahead, but I think I'm appropriate in saying if optimism holds true, every trial court will benefit. So if our optimism comes to pass in fact, then whatever methodology is used to distribute that $75 million will be to the benefit of every trial court, even above what we see ultimately portrayed page 43 and 44 of your materials, in which what I find helpful about the display is it shows at the end what every court will be getting. But that just starts the discussion. And so I'll open it up to comments, questions, any concerns at all. Chad?
Thanks, Judge Conklin. I do have a concern, and I think I will be casting a no vote, and I just want to explain briefly why. As we were looking at the numbers on pages 43 and 44, we noticed in the final column that three courts, one of them being Alameda, the other two being Del Norte and Plumas, showed a decrease in the 2018-19 WAFM allocation as compared to the 2017-18. This may have been a misunderstanding on our part. Our understanding of the methodology that you referred to and that the council adopted in January was that in a new budget year, I'm sorry, a new money year, which I realize that there's a disagreement potentially over whether the 47.8 is new money or in a subsequent flat budget year. Our understanding of the methodology was that essentially those two columns would be equal, would be the same. In other words, there would be no difference in 2017-18 WAFM allocation and 2018-19. So to sort of borrow and twist a phrase that you used, as a policy-driven, not a numbers-driven matter, we were not anticipating that in this year any court would decrease. And so that was a surprise to us to see that. Again, I understand that in our case, I can't speak for Del Norte and Plumas, there was a reduction in our benefits cost. So I understand that. But again, our understanding of the discussion that led up to the council's January vote was that regardless of which of these various factors you looked at, if it was a flat year or a new money year, there would be no reduction. And so again, that may have been a misunderstanding on our part, but I do think based on that, I'm compelled to cast a no vote. I want to make clear for the record, I don't intend to vote Brian Taylor's proxy no. That's my own vote that I'm talking about. And I just wanted to explain.
Thank you, Sherry.
You know, it could just be there's some confusion around the new money year and the no new money year, because that was directly related to the funding related to WAFM. So when we created, and I think this is a good opportunity for everybody to kind of understand, because the spreadsheets cause confusion, and that's why I like the new spreadsheets, and maybe we'll have to think about the summary sheets as well. But when we were developing the funding methodology around WAFM that's workload-based, that's where we came up with the new money year and the no new money year, and it would be every other year and things like that, and how we would deal with the averages. So the WAFM funding is directly related to column B, and then when we get the $75 million, that will have another column because that will be applied by WAFM. The other lines all have different funding behind them. So like you'll notice that for LA, the reduction for the conversions for subordinate judicial officers has a different funding line. The automated record keeping is, you know, and has a different line because it's related to a different level and a different type of funding, the same with self-help. So I think, Chad, it's really, you understood it completely, but it was directly related to just WAFM funding. The rest of these columns have different methodologies that have previously been approved around what they are. So specifically related to the benefit funding, because that's an actual cost, then you either get a reduction if your costs go down. I can say in LA we've had 2 years of reductions in the 5 years I've been there, maybe three, because our benefit costs went down. So I think your understanding is right, but it's only related to the WAFM part of the funding, and each column has its own funding methodology around it. So I don't think anything has, in fact, nothing has changed, but I think the confusion just might be that it doesn't apply to the whole spreadsheet because each column has its own funding authorization and funding methodology around it. And that would be the same with the AB 109. That's based on petitions. It's not part of WAFM. You know, there's a whole bunch of different funding methodologies around funding streams.
David?
Yeah, and this is David Yamasaki. My recollection over the many years that WAFM has been worked on and identifying different categories for separate sources of funding and solutions, it has, for as far back as I can remember, it has been a reimbursable program. Costs go up, costs go down. The beauty is that if costs go up, you get more money. And so that's one of the things that I think it's important for us to preserve, that there are differences in the different courts in terms of costs and benefits, and being able to maintain any opportunities to recover costs when they go up. I'm hoping that everybody recognizes that's a very, very good thing. As Sherry had may have suggested in terms of misunderstanding, I think many of us recognize that it was a separate line item, and I'm going to vote in support of this based on the past practice.
Thank you, Lucy.
Yeah, and I just want to explain that it shows in the display as a WAFM-related allocation because it counts towards your WAFM need. It's all work that is captured in the RAS model. So I don't want there to be any confusion about there's different methodologies, but we have to include them in the WAFM allocation because it's work related to WAFM.
Sure,
yeah.
But it's not what drives the workload-based.
It's not the methodology for WAFM.
Yeah, that Chad referred to because that was all related to how we handled RAS and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
So this is outside of the concern that I think was addressed and resolved through the ultimate determination of the perception earlier that courts were required to give back money to bring those courts that were below average up. This is not that calculation or factor. This is not an example of a court being given money and then being asked to return some of that money to the benefit of those courts that are below. I'm not saying that that doesn't also exists, but this is not an example of that. This is an example of an actual cost not being expended, and therefore an actual cost not being reimbursed. Did I see another hand, Tanya?
Appreciate Sherry's succinct. But it was very well stated. I don't know that we've ever really kind of talked about that, but for being an old dog in the room. These particular other items, not related to just workload allocation,
right,
have always been sort of fluid numbers from year to year. So having said that and agreeing with David, you know, following his comment up too, I will be supporting this.
Additional comments, questions? Mike Brody?
I guess I'm going to pile on those that are going to support the recommendation. You could have exactly identical workload and funding numbers in two consecutive years, but if your benefits go up or down, there will be a change at that number at the end, because it is based on actuals. And that's one area in the formula that does fluctuate based on actuals as opposed to kind of a workload-driven process. So I don't think we dug down that far when we were talking about the recommendation to hold harmless. But this is one of those anomalies that, because it's funded differently than other components within the RAS process, it is subject to some variation.
Tanya?
Just following up on that, Mike, it really still is hold harmless, because if you don't
right.
have the expenditure, then you don't have any need for that reimbursement.
Additional comments, concerns? David?
No additional comments, but if you're open to receiving a motion to approve this recommendation, I would so move.
And Judge Buckley, did I see your hand?
He did see my hand. what I was trying to articulate is, when we look at column B, to address the point, is there a way of saying that if you didn't have these adjustments that are outside a workload analysis, would Alameda would stay at the $71 million? I'm just wondering if we could, maybe offline even, have a column that shows that if it was in its own little world or a vacuum, that line item stays the same. It's not being adjusted. It's things outside of repeating what Sherry said. So that's maybe of help to others, that the amount being given to a court because of their filings and workload, et cetera, is not being decreased.
So we could divide it up to have a WAFM methodology allocation
maybe.
And then follow that up with WAFM-related allocations with different methodologies.
Right.
Yes.
Or even at the top yellow where it says right now changes to WAFM allocation, it could just be adjustments or something. So it's emphasizing that the WAFM calculation is not being changed. It's just the other paths that come to the total amount given to the court.
So a good example for LA is self-help funding. It's a separate stream. It's based on different factors. LA's losing 152,000 because of our population compared to other growth. It doesn't change my workload allocation under WAFM because it's a completely different funding source with different funding methodologies behind it. So because you did such a brilliant job in the reports that we're going to start using, maybe we could start looking at the spreadsheet, or maybe we stopped using the spreadsheet when we used a new one, because it's always caused some confusion by lumping in all of these different. They're related, and it shows the ultimate funding level compared to need, and so I know why we have to do it, but it does cause some confusion around it.
I just, as the one who started this whole thing, I just wanted to say that I do think those suggestions that Sherry and Judge Buckley made would help alleviate some of the confusion, so not to put more work on staff. But
no, I think it's a great suggestion. I think you your comment, as you conclude, is right. I think it was just confusion. I think it was, this is not moving up and down because of it. This is actual expenditures being adjusted based upon actual expenditures, and if you don't expend it, you don't get paid back for it. But I think there's a way that maybe we could enhance the displays to clarify that, playing off Judge Buckley's comment. Judge Cope, and then back to Tanya.
I don't think there was a second. No second.
Judge Cope seconds. Tanya?
I just have one other comment, and it can, you know, you can slap me if you think it's silly. But at the end of it, you know, I think part of the issue is it says, you know, WAFM allocation. Maybe it just needs to say total allocation on the end column, so that it's, this is the WAFM, these are the changes inherent to these other particular categories, and then your ultimate allocation is the end rather than putting the WAFM in there?
We just have to make sure we compare allocations to need on the WAFM piece, whereas some aren't related to WAFM need at all, but we'll figure it out.
Add total. Yeah. Something ultimate down there so that it's, you know, it's got your pluses and minuses, or a cookie, as I call it.
I think ironically, if we were in a year where we were actually going to make some adjustments in a no-money year, there would be an additional column on here that would basically indicate, you know, 5% reduction in WAFM-based allocation. Well, we don't see that. But it can be misleading if you're looking at the benefits category, because that does affect the WAFM bottom line in either direction. So maybe with some of these display improvements, we'll be able to overcome that.
Exactly, and I'm just playing off what Sherry said. So this, you're right, exactly. This is not one of those examples of when we're in now our second year of a drawdown or flat funding where we have to make an adjustment for those below. This is a separate adjustment outside of the WAFM need adjustment. It's been moved and seconded. I do not in any way want to stifle further discussion, so I'm opening it up to one last time. Any additional comments or discussion before I call for a vote? And just so I want to be clear on this, and Chad, I don't want to in any way, you initially prefaced your comment by saying you were going to vote no, but you were not exercising the proxy that you have to vote no. So that proxy would be exercised as a yes?
Correct.
Okay. So there is one no vote. Is there any additional opposition to the recommendation? I want to make sure we're accurate. As set forth, what page is it set forth on?
Well, you're assuming Chad still votes no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe he votes yes now.
Okay. Page 42. Chad?
I will stick with my no vote, but thank you.
Okay. So page 41, the recommendation set forth on page 41 and 42. Are there any additional no votes to that recommendation being forwarded to the Judicial Council? Hearing and seeing none, the recommendation to the Judicial Council is forwarded with the single no vote. All right. Okay. That gets us to item 8. We've got Don in the room concerning allocation of court-appointed dependency council funding. Don, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. This report is... recommends allocation of the $136.7 million provided for court-appointed dependency council funding using the Judicial Council methodology, which was approved, and there's been a series of approvals and methodology adjustments in FY 15, 16, and 17 to come to the methodology that we use to allocate the funding to the courts. I want to point out quickly that on page 50, I think we reversed our positives and negatives. So when you look at column F, difference from prior year, the numbers in parentheses actually represent an increase in allocation from 17-18 to 18-19. The numbers not in parentheses represent a decrease.
That's great to know.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where I was going to claw back the money we just increased.
Okay. Yeah. Apologies for that. Very briefly, this is the final year of the process that began in 15-16, originally initiated by this committee to shift dependency council allocations from a historically based allocation method where courts essentially got the funding that they had received the prior year to a caseload-based method. We have gone through 4 years of adjustments with some courts taking cuts and other courts getting increases. The adjustments were basically carried out using a mix of funding and calculated by the historical amount and funding calculated by the new methodology until this year, when everyone's funding is now calculated by the methodology approved by the council. That methodology was approved in FY16 by a subcommittee of a joint subcommittee of this group and FAMJUV. After that methodology was approved, another working group was formed to look at the small courts, as you may recall from the last meeting where we discussed it in a little more depth, and some exemptions were carved out after applying this base methodology for small courts. So these final figures take all of those into account. I'd remind the committee again that the small court exemption was good for, was passed for FY 17-18, and this year, for this coming year, FY 18-19. And I believe the funding methodology subcommittee is going to take that up in this coming year. Otherwise, I'm happy to answer any questions about the methodology or the allocations.
Don, thank you very much. Questions or concerns? This would be the recommendation set forth at page 48 and 49 of your material.
Yeah, it's Mike Planet. So I would strongly recommend that the table, attachment 8A, be revised, because anybody else looking at this, as I did, is going to assume that that's a parentheses is a negative.
Yes.
And so with that change, I don't know if that's necessarily remembered, but I would recommend adoption of the recommendation with the changes to attachment 8A.
Okay. And Don, that you understand, you get where that is? Okay.
Yes.
That's the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded. So the motion that's been seconded is for approval of the recommendation set forth on page 49 with the subnote that the chart set out on page 50 be clarified for the reasons set forth by Mr. Planet. Any additional comments or concerns about this recommendation being moving forward? Any opposition to the recommendation? Hearing none, the recommendation is unanimously approved and moved forward. We're not done yet. We're getting there. We have now moved beyond all action items. The remaining item on our agenda is an informational item. And Zlatko, you're on the phone?
Yeah.
Excellent. So this is now not the final item on the agenda for today, and that's just an update on the budget.
Yeah. Thank you, Judge Conklin. In fact, I'm currently listening to both your conversations and Budget Conference Committee, which has initiated their deliberations on the differences between the houses. I mean, if folks are interested in looking up the information, we can send out a link to the agendas. But at this point, what we have is, and I said this to folks yesterday at the CIAC and PJ meeting, was that both houses have completed their review of the governor's proposal, and they have their own versions of the budget. A particular note is that they both adopted revenue estimates that were $2.8 billion more than the governor and his May revision. They've spent large pieces of those on one time, but substantial portions are ongoing, and so they're going to put pressure, if adopted, on sort of future budgets, in which some of the augmentations were proposed for the judicial branch. The deputy director from the Department of Finance testified yesterday at the opening and has indicated that this will be a common statement made by her, Amy Costa, during the budget conference committee, that they don't support expenditures that are above their May revision. And so we expect there to be a lot of discussions about where some of the issues land. You know, there's been a substantial investment in education, health, and homelessness in the two versions of the budget. And they're debating currently the education area. They both commit to strong investments in the rainy day funds, which the administration is happy about. But again, they commit to ongoing funding that is beyond the governor's budget. Their concern is that while the administration's proposal reflects continued growth in our economy, we are coming to the end of the they expect one of the longest growth periods that the state has incurred in recent memory. So with that, we do have a number of, and we talked about this a bit during the meeting today, about what's still sort of before the budget and the things that we took action on today to recommend to the council in anticipation of funding like self-help. There are augmentations that were included in the governor's budget that have been met with no opposition, such as language access, a $4 million one time, as well as a
$4 million increase that was included in the May revision related to equipment and training is an example for language access. But in terms of sort of the core issues that are still outstanding before the legislature and the conference committee, we have the issue of the $75 million. Houses took different approaches. The Senate is mostly aligned in the way in which the governor proposed it, but did specify allocation methodology being used via WAFM, and including a DOF LAO review of WAFM, which the legislative analyst had recommended in their review that came out in March. The Assembly, on the other hand, while approving the same $75 million level, earmarked $15 million of it for court reporters and family proceedings, $30 million to be allocated via WAFM, and $30 million to the discretion of the Judicial Council. We're seeing some of the language coming out now in terms of the court reporters, because the Senate did a separate action to add money rather than carving it out of the 75, a three-year, $10 million per year increase for court reporter funding that they provided some language that said in the event it's not sufficient, they would provide a priority of how court reporters would be deployed in family law. But so that's one of the sort of difficulties, is that the speed at which the committees are working, not all the trailer bill and budget bill language has been developed, and so we're just sort of, as things are happening, seeing them as we go. And as Martin often says, you know, once the budget's completed, it does take some time for us to make sure we've reviewed everything and are subject to updates. And that was just a new item in terms of the court reporters that we had learned about today. Budget Conference Committee Chair, Assemblymember Phil Ting from San Francisco, identified sort of their plan, hoping that they would complete their work by next Thursday, which is quick. But because of the requirements that they pass a budget by June 15th, they have to get their work done quickly. The requirement also provides that if they do not pass the budget to the governor by the 15th, that they do not get their pay. So they're strongly incentivized to do so. The other factor in terms of their speed is that there's a requirement that the bills that are to be voted on the floor have a 72-hour in-print requirement. And so they're, again, having to move quickly to resolve the issues between the houses and put a budget forward to the governor. One thing I think we've learned over the last few years is that this speed has led to certain actions being included in the budget that is passed in June that then may need to be addressed in what they call in subsequent pieces of legislation that are often referred to as budget bill junior language that could adjust things. So while we're tracking what's before us and are optimistic that, you know, the funding that the governor has proposed will remain in the budget, we'll stay vigilant on that. There are issues of trailer bill note as it relates to failure to appear. The Senate and Assembly adopted some language that after a person who has an FTA satisfies the order to appear in court, the court shall lift the hold, they'll not issue a bench warrant, they're requiring additional courtesy notices to be mailed and sent to the DMV. And so there's just this ongoing push by folks, and this is not something that the administration proposed, but something that came in the legislature, you know, still talking about our issues with relates to traffic, failures to pay, failures to appear. So there's just a lot going on, judgeships, justices in the budget, an issue called the court's honest budget that was adopted by the Senate, which would provide for starting in the, not this budget year, 18-19, but in starting in 19-20, about a $60 to $70 million increase. That's sort of the cost of doing business adjustment. It's good to see an acknowledgement that, you know, the branch does have costs, the trial courts have costs that need to be addressed going forward. So that's why I'm here in Sacramento, because of what's going on with the budgets. I'm sorry I couldn't join you today, but there's a lot going on, and right now is really the busy time, and where we're trying to bring this budget home for all of you to improve access and get court operations heading in the right direction. So if there are any questions, please feel free. And there's John on the line as well.
ever.
Judge Conklin, if you don't mind, just a quick moment. This is John Wardlaw. I wanted to reiterate what Zia said. Normally, we'd both be over there. I know there are substantive issues on today's agenda for consideration. But the conversations here at the Capitol are going on. They happen quick, and we want to make sure that we're available given the importance of this budget. I would like to reiterate the importance that we continue to be united in our support for this budget. This time of year, because things are happening so quickly, you can find surprises where if there's disruptions where folks decide to put money in different places. And so I think as a family, we have done an outstanding job in advocating on behalf of the discretionary funding that all courts will benefit from in this governor's budget. I'd ask for everybody on the phone in the room there to continue that support because to the extent that there are disruptions, dollars can go away very quickly, and we certainly wouldn't want that. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much, John. Judge Lucas, did you have a question?
I do. John Zlotko, I'm curious whether in all the discussions that you've heard about court reporters and family court, there's any recognition of an alternative means of making a record if the trial courts are unable to find court reporters to hire?
Yeah, early on in the budget process, there was some group that had identified a potential pilot on a digital record, but that didn't find it. And that was a proposal that they were taking to some legislators. But otherwise, it's not been something that surfaced in any of the discussions related to the funding. I think what the acknowledgement by the legislature would be that in the event that the funding is insufficient or staff is insufficient, that they're providing, I think, similar to language access, a priority listing of what they think would be the way in which we would deploy any of the available resources we have. But I hear what you're saying. I know, discussions in the Futures Commission in terms of digital records broadly used within the branch. But no, unfortunately, Judge Lucas, that's not been part of the conversation.
Thank you.
Judge Cole?
Zlotko, you mentioned something about discussions related to judges and justices. What was that?
Yeah, the Assembly did take a specific action in which they were identifying four judges to be placed in the Corona Courthouse in Riverside. I know that there was a presentation, that was on the Senate. During budget discussions in the Assembly, Vice Chair Obernolte in the Assembly had presented a request for additional judgeships, but that was more broad in terms of not specifying it. So there's an issue before the conference committee, and we'll see where it goes in terms of the actions that they may take. But again, it's something that is outside of the governor's plan. And as we've talked about our efforts to try and get money into the budget that was outside, if it's not part of the governor's plan, it finds itself to be a difficult road to hoe. So I think while we would welcome additional investments, we're focused on the governor's budget. And I think staying united and focused on that advocacy is critical. And so while it may be something that is critical importance to the branch in terms of additional judgeships and justices, staying focused on that which is in the governor's budget, I think, would be most advisable.
Any additional questions for John or Zlotko?
I didn't fail to mention, sorry about that, Judge Conklin.
Sorry.
The construction program is another issue that's before the conference committee. While both houses approved the funding, they took slightly different approaches on our progress forward. We believe that this intent of the Senate action is that an analysis of our future needs needs to be done before we embark on any additional projects. We're trying to clarify that, where it's very clear in the Assembly that while they've adopted the funding, they are asking for us to do an assessment prior to the initiation of any of the projects that are in the budget. And so while we appreciate their support for the funding, we want to make sure that, working with the administration,
that the projects that are programmed in the budget do get to go move forward, and we acknowledge we do need to do an assessment of future needs and what's the prioritization of those projects. And with that, I'm...
All right. We truly appreciate, don't take this the wrong way, but we're glad you're there and not here. So thanks very much for the efforts, especially today, in moving this forward. Any additional questions for John or Zlatko? Great, hearing none. Thank you again. So I think that gets us to the adjournment stage, folks. Our practice at this committee has been, before we adjourn, to see if there's any, recognizing this is an open meeting and we just have action items we've taken care of. Any additional concerns or comments for the good of the order? Anything today anybody is particularly concerned about? I remind you that many of these things, and that's why we have advisory committees to advisory committees, we annually address ongoing issues as FMS and RNE and everybody else will continue to do. Thank you for all those efforts. And as I started to staff, I think we all recognize that without them, candidly, we would not be able to conduct business. So thank you all so much for the work you do to make us as effective as we are. With that, any additional comments before we adjourn? It's noon. And just in case there's any concerns about everybody being in the room for a two-hour meeting, many of these folks were here before today. After discussion with staff, we felt it would be most productive to have an in-person meeting today, especially considering the work we completed. So that's why we're here rather than being telephonic. But that being said, I adjourn the meeting. Thank you all so much.
Are we muted?
There is. So there is, for those of you that have worked hard to get here, in return for that, obviously we want to make sure that you are sustained on your way out, so there's lunch in the back room. Feel free to leave, but you're encouraged to stay for discussion if you'd like.